නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස So actually past few weeks actually we have spent fair amount of time discussing some suttas which are particularly talking about some vipassana aspects related to various vipassana meditation techniques and certain experiences of vipassana, and appear like somewhat technical stuff we have spending fair amount of time. And I thought of shifting our attention to some other area, because sometimes when we as meditators, when we are continuing, the practice can become somewhat dry, or it can lean towards a very secluded, and even can lead into a selfish kind of an attitude. But on the other hand, Buddha seems recommended how one can lead a fairly a pious life, a more a life endowed with very good human qualities, and that is also coupled with a very deep wisdom. So the wisdom and the compassion are two important characteristics that the Buddha represent. So he is embodied with a great compassion, and on the other hand, he is embodied with a great wisdom. So how we can balance these two aspects is actually challenging. And anyway, we have spent fair amount of time talking about the wisdom side, vipassana side. So I thought of shifting our attention now to the other side, that is more into the human qualities side. And we can find various suttas where Buddha talks about very subtle human qualities, soft qualities. Those are very essential for the liberation. It is not that we have to be completely wise and dry-hearted to get enlightened. Rather, so this balance between very pleasant, calm, relax, good human qualities, positive, soft, good human qualities, and then it is coupled with the wisdom, seems giving a more balanced approach to the mind, evenness to the mind, and again it may facilitate the liberating process. So I have selected one interesting sutta which is available in the Suttanipata. It is called Purabheda Sutta. So the Purabheda, the term literally means before the breaking off of the body. That means before the death. So there's an interesting history to this sutta. And to each and every Buddha, you know that not only the Gautama Buddha, to other Buddhas as well, there is a only once in his lifetime, there is a whole gathering of devas. Not only devas, even the Brahmas. And there's a huge gathering, a large gathering of devas and Brahmas happen. That is only to that extent, that means to that magnitude, that is only once it is happening. So it is called Mahasamaya, and where many, many innumerable number of devas and Brahmas are gathering, and they are asking various questions, and Buddha is preaching to them. And this is recorded in the Mahasamaya Sutta, and certain names of those devas and Brahmas are also mentioned in what who were in that great gathering. And Buddha looked at their minds, and accordingly he preached the Dhamma. And likewise, many suttas are there where he preached to those devas. Mahasamaya Sutta actually talks about the names particularly who were there, and then various other suttas like Kalahavivada Sutta, Purabheda Sutta, Sammaparibbhajaniya Sutta, Tuvataka Sutta. So likewise, several suttas are there where Buddha particularly target a certain audience of devas and Brahmas based on their mental qualities, you can say latent tendencies or defilements, and then address that gathering, that group, and accordingly they are able to understand the Dhamma. Now, while Buddha was preaching, and certain devas were thinking, what we have to do before the death? What we have to do before the death? So you know that the devas and the brahmas are living long life, and unlike the humans, they have a very long lifespan. And anyway, they want to get the maximum benefit of their life. And so they were also thinking what we need to do before the breaking off of the body. So that was the kind of thought certain devas were having. And this was noticed by the Buddha. And accordingly, he has to deliver a message to the others. But unfortunately, there is no any deva or brahma who are capable of asking some subtle questions. So you know, even to ask a question, the person has to have a very good sharp wisdom. Then only he may ask a very interesting, very valuable and a suitable type of a question. Otherwise, they will ask some useless questions. So in this gathering, so Buddha understood, okay, these questions are difficult to ask, so there is no opportunity for me to explain them if these questions are not asked. So what he did was to create a mind-made Buddha. So he has created the Buddha and with some disciples, and disciples are followed, and the Buddha is also there. Now two Buddhas are there. So one is the real Buddha, and the other one is the mind-made Buddha. So this mind-created, mind-made Buddha is also visible to the others, to the devas. And now they are further satisfied by seeing two Buddhas and the monks as well. And they were delighted. And this gathering, now this mind-made Buddha is asking a question from the real Buddha. Now the Buddha is answering. So this is the background to this interesting sutta, and we'll see what the mind-created Buddha is asking. Katan dassi katan silo upasantoti ucchati tamme gotama pabruhi puccito uttamang narang. Katan dassi katan silo. So how does he see, how does he behave? Upasantoti ucchati, the one who is mentioned as a peaceful person, a muni. Tamme Gautama pabruhi. So please, Venerable Gautama, please tell it to me. Puchito uttamang narang. And describe the supreme person. So basically he is asking a very good qualities of the muni, or we can say the arahants. And how he is seeing the world. So how he perceives the world. And what is the kind of behavior that he is having? And he is asking this question from the Buddha, addressing him as Gautama. Now, once this question is asked, now Buddha is going to give a detailed explanation about various aspects. And so that is what given here in this Sutta, and now we'll see the Buddha's answer. So, Vita Tanho Pura Bheda, or Pura Bhedu, Pubba Manta Anisitu, Vemajje Nupa Sankheyo, Tassa Natti Purakkatam. Now, actually, the terms used in this verses are very rare. Actually, certain Pali verses are quite familiar to us, and the words are also quite familiar. But the words in this sutta are not yet, not frequently we come across. So there are certain very unique type of Pali words which are giving some very interesting meanings anyway. So, Vita Tanho Pura Bheda. So basically he is saying, devoid of craving before the breakup. Pubba Manta Anisito, and not having any association or any dependency towards the past. Vemajje Nupa Sankheyo, and not to be reckoned in the middle. tassa natti purakkhatam, and there is no any preference. Now, when we simply look at the literal meaning or translation of this verse, we can't recognize much detail. But once we look at it closely, so there are very concise inclusion or concise implementation of very detailed explanation. So Buddha has given a very concise, very precise type of verse, but now we have to see how we can explain it, or we can elaborate it, and what are the points that we can recognize. So one thing in the Sutta Nipata is very much like that. So this is also coming in the Attaka Nipata of Sutta Nipata, and Parayana Vagga also is another section. So Parayana Vagga and Attaka Nipata, Attaka Vagga, are both very very deep. And probably you have heard about the Parayana Vagga, where the certain Brahmas, or rather Brahmins, are asking various questions. 16 Brahmins are asking various deep questions from the Buddha using their mind, and Buddha reads their mind and then answers those questions through the words. And those are also very deep. Answers are also very deep and concise, and sometimes even difficult to understand. So Attaka Vagga is also somewhat like that. So the verses are very deep and concise, so it's difficult to understand, but very very deep and very very interesting. So as we explore, we can see very interesting aspects that we can learn, we can recognize, and we can develop within ourselves. Now, devoid of craving before the breakup. Now, this is the theme of the whole sutta, Pura Bheda. So what you need to do before the death. So the concise answer is you need to abandon craving. Simple as that. So how to abandon craving and how much you have already abandoned, so that's a different story. So that is where the practice is. That is where we already have discussed fair amount of detail. So various different practices, vipassana practices, satipatthana practice. So all that is there to recognize when certain suffering is there and what is the cause of suffering, and how one can abandon that cause, and then you become peaceful. So anyway, the goal is to abandon craving, because the craving is the cause of suffering. So before the breakup, before the death, so one should abandon craving. So because this birth is also a product of our craving, so we have already come to this life. If we continue to say develop craving or increase craving, allow it to further develop, ultimately we will definitely have another birth, maybe another birth, maybe another birth, a kind of an endless wandering in this sansara. But on the other hand, once you recognize that there is craving, there is some sort of a desire right now in the present moment, probably we can see its result. Maybe there may be little frustration, maybe little agitation, unsatisfaction, kind of a burden to the mind, and mind becomes somewhat blocked, hindered. Now all these are representations of the suffering which was caused by the previous craving. Now if we are able to abandon craving, then we can see, okay, so there is no craving, there is no desire, the mind is not agitated, mind is very peaceful, it is very much like contented. So abandoning craving basically depends on how you can recognize craving. So without recognizing, without understanding craving, you can't abandon. Typically what happened is we were driven by craving. So the craving is there, tanha is there, and tanha has initiated certain request, and we blindly follow it, and we fulfill the craving, satisfy the craving. So that is the vicious cycle that we typically go through, not knowing how to handle craving. So we are always struggling to satisfy our desires, fulfill our desires, follow the desires. So that is what the ignorant cycle is promoted, more and more satisfying our desires. But here in the practice, we have to see how to recognize the desire and then to let it go. So dukkha samudayang ariya saccam pahatabba. So the cause of suffering, that the tanha, has to be abandoned. So actually these four noble truths we already discussed at previous cases. So anyway, the very concise answer given here is, before the death you need to abandon craving. And then pubbamanta anissito, not dependent on the past. Now most of us have various our past experiences, maybe our university time, maybe our good times with our friends, or certain traumatic experiences that we had, or maybe some beautiful or enjoyable experiences we had. So all different kinds of either positive or negative type of experiences are there. Particularly as you grow old, so that is where you are trying to keep your attention, because there is no much motivation, but you had some good memories, you had some good events, so mind tends to look back them and enjoy them. So typically associating the past is a kind of a addiction that we all have, and we used to again and again enjoy the past incidents. And sometimes regretting about what has happened. So that is also actually separately mentioned here. So the association of the past therefore leads to various defilements, and particularly leading towards the conceptual proliferation, kind of regrets and obsessions, and ultimately you can even end up with depression or maybe a certain other mental sickness. All that are possible because you are fairly driven by the past, always associating the past, holding the past, remembering the past. So our memory to some extent helpful to trigger this, but unfortunately that memory is also vague and inaccurate, and our tendencies or our prejudices all are embedded to this experience. So anyway, we are very much like enjoying the past. Now here the idea given by the Buddha is, you are not dependent on the past. So you are now very much have to be in the present moment and not lingering about the past. And if we take out the next part and go to the other side, tassa natti purakkhatam, and there are no preferences. So these preferences are somewhat related to the future. So what are your preferences? So typically we all have different preferences. Okay, I'm going to live here, I'm going to go there, I'm going to be with him, I'm going to participate in a particular event. So while I'm going there, okay, I have to have this kind of clothing, and I have to meet these people, and they have to behave like this, our government have to be like this, the climate has to be like this, my children have to be like this, my parents have to be like this. Now all these are our say desire based preferences. So we all have preferences. So certain framework. So within that framework, I am very much like fixated, and there I am asking others to behave the way I want. And I too myself want to behave the same way that I have thought. So how my mind is kind of framing certain experiences. So preferences are there. And particularly we project it to the future. So these are my preferences. These are my desires. Particularly the preferences literally mean that we have certain way of accepting or expecting a certain incident to happen a preferred way, our preferred way. But unfortunately, there is no such liability or an agreement between ourselves and the other person or the other incident. They also depend on so many other uncontrollable reasons, causes. So even though we have certain preference, so that might not be fulfilled. So we ultimately get frustrated. So particularly when we are thinking about the future, so this is the case. We may be thinking, we may be imagining, we may be fantasizing, spending fair amount of time, but when things are really happening, ultimately completely a different way. Our preferences are very much like ignored. So what happened to us? So we feel embarrassed, we feel somewhat depressed, unhappy, because we had a certain prejudice, we have a certain preference that was not fulfilled. Now here Buddha recommends that this person, this Arahant, has no preference. So how to live without a preference? And the interesting part is the middle, that is the present moment. There also Buddha say, Vema je nupasankhayo. So you are not to be reckoned in the middle. So even in the middle, that is the present moment, so there also there is no any grasping. So you are very much like living without bounded, without hindered, without grasped, but still awareness is there. So this is difficult to understand. I mean, probably you can recognize when I am telling this from your certain vipassana experience. So how to maintain a mind which is not associating the past, not expecting anything in the future, and also not established within the present. So typically we talk about mindfulness telling, okay, you need to establish mindfulness in the present moment. So you find an object and try to keep your attention on that object and try to fully experience that. So that is where you are established in the present moment. So that is necessary at the beginning. So without it you can't practice. So that is how we start. So but as we continue the practice, so you are supposed to understand the true nature of various phenomena under your scrutiny. So then ultimately what happens, those phenomena starts behaving their own in the sense due to various other influences of their causing factors, and you being the observer can see their true nature, true behavior. Their impermanent characteristics, their unsatisfactory characteristics, their non-self, non-governable characteristics, all that you can recognize, understand. So slowly, slowly, so the attachment or grasping towards that present moment phenomena reduce, diminish, and your mind become freed. So this is the typical vipassana process, what we explain in the Satipatthana. And ultimately, it is leading to an unassociated mind, anisita state of mind. So pubba manta anisito, and again vemajje upasankhayo tassa natti purakkata. So very much like talking about the three time spaces. So previous one pubba manta anisito, so you are not associating the past. Vemajje nupasankhayo, so in the middle, that is the present moment, there also you are not reckoned, there also not you are grasping, holding. And on the other hand, tassa natti purakkatam, towards the future there are no preferences. Now the last part may be difficult. Now probably you kind, we might implement our vipassana practice and we may be able to maintain a mind without grasping, so that's also a good achievement. But we still may have preferences. Okay, my teacher has to be like this, my children has to be like this, my students have to be like this, my monastery have to be like this, my politicians, my president, prime minister, all have to be like this, my country have to be like this. So likewise, we typically have those kind of tendencies, those preferences. So having no preference is kind of an unbelievable type of way of living. No preference. Very much like you are acting spontaneously. It's basically only option we have is to act spontaneously. So your guardian is the mindfulness. You are simply open to the situation. And whatever happens, you can accept. It's a kind of a radical acceptance. And you can act spontaneously because you didn't have any preference. Say while you are going in the road, so you didn't expect a traffic jam, so it can happen. So if since you didn't expect and you have an expectation to go to a particular place quickly, now you are in trouble. Now the mind is wandering, now the mind is complaining how we are going to reach that place. Now you are in a traffic jam. So now this kind of an uncertainty can lead some sort of a mental agitation, unsatisfaction. But how about if there is no preference? So if you are going through the present moment, you are going through the present event, and you accept it the way it is. Now you have no options, you are already in the traffic jam, so you have to go through it, accept it, no preference. And you might get late, so you have to accept it. Because you went through it, you know now definitely I'm going to be late, so you accept it. Not allowing the mind to get agitated. So typically what happened, how the agitation might happen, the unsatisfaction happens, is because there is a projected way of thing, projected way of happening, which is against the current happening, the real happening. Our reality and the projected expectation are having a certain difference. So that difference always makes us unhappy. So they are rarely, by the way, our expectation is 100% met, then we can be happy. But it is very rare. Most of the time, what happens? Even though we have preferences, even though we have expectations, there may be certain discrepancies when it is really happening. Then we become unhappy. So there's an indication here by the Buddha. So have a kind of a mindset which can accept what is happening. The more kind of a very brave type of mindset. Always ready to accept, always ready to accept everything in a radical way. And you are ready for that, and you can face it. So very, very mature type of way of living. So here Buddha points out very subtle qualities actually. So we can simply jump to the other verse and go, but if we recognize certain subtle aspects where Buddha included in this Purabeda Sutta, so very, very interesting areas that we can see. How we can navigate through our life by incorporating these qualities, what Buddha is recommending that we have to have before we die. So before the death, Purabeda, before the death, try to do this, try to accomplish a life like this. Now let's go to the next verse. And then Buddha say, Akkodhano. असंतासी अविखत्ती अकुक्कुचो मंतभानी अनुद्धतो सवे वाचायतो मुनि अक्कोधनो. नाउ दिस इज अ सिंपल पार्ट. अक्कोधनो द वन हु इज फ्री फ्रॉम एंगर. असंतासी हु इज नॉट फियरफुल, ही इज अनअफ्रेड. Avikatti, not boastful. Akukkucho, and doesn't have any regrets, not regretting. Mantabhani, speaking with reflection, with wisdom. Anuddhato, not restless. Save vachayato muni, this muni, the sage, is truly controlled in the speech. Now, these qualities are also very refine certain human qualities. Now, akkodhano. So this is straightforward actually. So we know that typically our minds are getting agitated and we become frustrated and ultimately we become angry. We maintain certain disagreements and get into certain arguments and ultimately even some revengeful thoughts are there and ultimately we can even kill each other. So the anger is basically destroying the peace, and it can even lead to various aspects. So typically in the Dhamma there are 10 ways explained telling how the anger can happen, thinking that a particular person can harm me right now, so you become angry because he is going to harm, that's what you think, and he's harming right now maybe, so you're being angry. Probably you are thinking that he harmed me in the past, so you again become angry, and you think, okay, he in the future he is going to harm me, attack me, abuse me, so you become angry. Or else you can attribute it to a person that you love. So he is going to attack my loved one, say to my husband, to my wife, to my children, to my country. So thinking like that, okay, he is harming my loved one, so you can become angry. Or he has harmed my loved one in the past, so you can become angry. Now he is going to harm in the future to my loved one, so you can become angry. On the other hand, you can imagine of a person who is your enemy. There may be another person who is helping that enemy. So you can become angry to that person now. Probably you can recognize that that person has helped this enemy. So again you are angry with that person because he already helped in the past to this enemy. Or is going to help this enemy in the future. So you are angry with that person. So likewise, the three scenarios with respect to yourself and with respect to your loved one and with respect to the enemy, altogether we have 9 possibilities of becoming angry. And there's the 10th one, even without a cause you can become angry. So typically therefore many different ways are there for one to become angry. So we easily get angry, even with the temperature we can become angry, even when raining we can become angry, even tornado comes you can become angry. I heard that new tornado is coming towards the US, the Florida. So again you can become angry. So when the weather is not good you can become angry. So all these different other possibilities are also there for one to become angry. So anger is also has other aspects, like you are holding it for a long time, or you can quickly give it up, or you can recognize it early, or you are completely driven by that. So the practice is applied there. So how one can slowly overcome anger. So probably you can recognize anger, but still the anger is so powerful you couldn't stop. You get into the argument knowingly. So that is one aspect. Maybe you can recognize anger, you are burning with anger, but you didn't go to the argument. You are able to maintain some restraint. That's another level. And you can recognize the anger, burning is less because you are able to understand the anger at its early stage. So less burning, and probably you can take an action to overcome anger, so again you become peaceful. That's another stage. Maybe you can recognize anger at its very inception, maybe its first thought, very little level, minimum level you can understand, and then you can easily abandon it. So that is the developed level, we can say, where the mindfulness is very sharp, clear comprehension is very sharp. You can easily recognize the initiation of the anger. Probably that recognition itself would be enough for that anger to abandon. So likewise, the gradual development is necessary for to overcome the anger. But before that, probably you can make use of metta meditation likewise to maintain some calmness, happiness within the mind. That also helpful to abandon anger. So these things are related to the practice. But the statement here Buddha mentioned is you have to become akkodhano, one without anger, before the death. And then asantasi, not afraid. So how one become afraid? So basically there should be a one to become angry and there should be a one to become afraid. So if there is no one, then there can't be any anger, there can't be any fear. Suppose that you are able to understand non-self through the practice. You are practicing diligently and at one level you understood, okay, there is no person here, there is no being here. So everything is fully dependently arisen. So it's a kind of a causal procedure happening. So and you thoroughly, deeply understood, okay, the proper nature. And now because of the wisdom, your mind has stopped preparing, your mind has stopped all the fabrications. So basically you are experiencing the present moment to the full, to the fullest. So at that moment there can't be anger, at that moment there can't be any fear. So the fear is actually a manifestation of the defilements. Very difficult to understand also, because we sometimes try to rationalize the fear, telling, okay, fear is necessary for you to get rid of a difficult situation or to get rid of a kind of a danger. The fear is necessary. But on the other hand, fear is a defilement. So when you are with someone else, how you become fearful? When you are in a particular situation, how you become fearful, being afraid? So that always has a link towards the personality view and the sense of I. So there is a person to protect. So I need to be protected. I need to look after myself. I have to be saved. So I is there. Strong sense of I is there. So this I is in a threat, in a dreadful situation, in a dangerous situation. So you become angry. Sorry, you become fearful. So here Buddha is saying he is unafraid. The Arahant is unafraid. So there is no fear. Actually, it is not only the Arahant, even the non-returner, Anagami, is also said he is not fearful. He is free from any fear. Unafraid. And another interesting part Buddha highlight, avikatti. Avikatti is not boastful. Now typically there is a person, so this is I am very important, I am better than you, so you have to listen to me, I am so and so, this is my education, this is my learning, this is my wealth, this is my children, and all that are there to boast ourselves. So people really exaggerate their status, they really like to boast and to impress others. And this is a typical tradition in the human realm. The people are boasting. They want to show their presence. They want to show their achievement. They want to become popular. So in order to become popular, you boast yourself. So what? It is not that you want to hide yourself, but boasting, showing what is not there, but exaggeration. These are typically not talked, and typically these are happening every day, but sometimes others can't even understand that when the person is boasting, they simply think, okay, he is the best. But only the people who know thoroughly, properly, they only know, okay, this guy is boasting, he's simply showing off. But Buddha invites us that this person, this Arahant, is not boasting. So he may have all the good qualities, he may have all the beautiful skills, tremendous kind of skills, but he doesn't want to show off. He's simply living a simple, innocent life, not boasting. Now, this is not the typical financial, economical way of living. So typically in the world, people are very much like taught how to exaggerate themselves, how to market themselves, how to impress others, how to use certain way of behavior to impress others, to attract others, to sell the product. So a lot of marketing tricks are being taught today. But here the opposite is mentioned, that you become non-boastful. Now, in order to recognize whether I am boasting, you have to be very, very precisely mindful. You should know yourself very precisely. Then only you can see whether I am leading or I am now crossing the boundary. So am I within the boundary, within my capacity, within my real nature, or am I exceeding it and now trying to boast myself? You have to be very, very honest. Without honesty, you can't understand it. So boasting typically happens sometimes without even people's knowledge. So they probably have overestimated themselves because of their ignorance. And so they typically boast about themselves. Okay, I can do it. I don't worry. I can do it. So you overestimate yourself. Or else you say that someone else has done, but you attribute it to you. Okay, I am the one who did it. I am the one who did it well. So likewise, you can boast about yourself in many different ways, but particularly highlighting the person. So the more you have sakkadipti, more will be the boasting. Because there is a person. You acknowledge there is a person. So this person has to be a magnificent person. This person has to be a powerful person. So he is the boss. So this is the typical mentality people are having. So when they are with the crowd, when they are with their group, their teammates, so you want to highlight yourself. But on the other hand, as practitioners, so the Buddha's advice here, not to be boast. Don't boast yourself. So be more realistic. And even typically it is mentioned that the good advice is you need to develop all the good qualities, good skills, but not to show off. When someone is asking, probably if it is really necessary, you can help in the sense you can participate since it has come to you. Otherwise, you be quiet. Now, this is very much against the typical traditional financial way of living. So typical way of living is that you become very important and you show off, get the everyone's attraction, and you be the boss. But now Buddha is recommending not to be boasting, not boastful. Avikatti, akukkucho, not regretful. Now regret. Now typically the kukkuccha is the regret. Say you can regret in many different ways. So typically with respect to the past, you can regret thinking, okay, I couldn't do that, I couldn't meditate, I couldn't practice. All the good things that you couldn't do can lead to a certain regret. Say you want to go to a particular place that is very important, but you couldn't do that. You wanted to practice diligently, but you got sick, okay, you are regretting about what has happened. Or you have to be patient at a particular situation, but you couldn't do, but you went through certain argument, so you regret about what has happened. Okay, you have attacked someone where you have to be somewhat patient, but you have attacked. So you couldn't maintain your behavior. So you are regretting. So the regret can happen based on what you did, certain unacceptable or bad type of a behavior. But on the other hand, you can be regretting about what you couldn't do, that is the good side. So regret can happen in two ways. You are regretting certain bad things what you have done because you went through it, or else you might regretting because you couldn't do the good things. But again, with respect to the future also, maybe a certain kind of an unsatisfaction can happen, uncertainty can happen. So that also has a certain taste of regret. Okay, my country is going to be like this, so you are regretting. Okay, my health is going to be like this in the future, so you are regretting. So you understand a certain situation is now going to the downfall, so you regret about it. So likewise, so the regret can happen in different ways. So it can lead to depression and you become really sort of broken-hearted. So all these things are possible. But the advice here is not regretful. So you can actually link this one with the previous verse where Buddha is saying, Pubba mantang anissitu. So you are not associating the past. So particularly the association of past can lead to regrets. But if you are able to maintain a mind which is not much associated in the past, you can keep the mind free from regrets or any grievances. And again, if you are having no preferences, then there also you can have a mind which is free from regrets. Because you don't have any preference, so you are able to accept whatever happens. You are ready, very brave, no regrets. Now, not regretting. Akkuccho, akukuccho. And mantabhani. So where the person, this wise person, this arahant, is always with kind of a reflection. So always he is speaking with certain certainty, or we can say the truthful things. So he is careful about his speech. Not careful in the sense that he have to artificially control himself. Rather, the causes for lying, divisive speech, slandering, maybe harsh speech, all are very much like abandoned, because he is free from lust, he is free from hatred, delusion. So his speech is very much like an amenable one, a soft speech, a useful speech. So he know what to speak. Therefore, his speech is called mantabhani. And anuddhato. And anuddhato, he is not restless. Now, regret and restless are two different things. Now, regretting basically has where you are thinking about the past, I couldn't do that. So you are showing certain even bodily behaviors, indicating that your mind is in a little type of frustration because something has happened, but you are regretting about it. Now, restlessness can happen even without it. So your mind, rather than being peaceful and staying quiet, staying without agitation, it is subject to very subtle restlessness. So as we continue our practice, probably you can see sometimes even when the mind becomes somewhat bored, it may be taking a piece of song and trying to enjoy it. It may be naturally going to a past incident and trying to shift itself. Or it can't simply stay quiet. It can't simply stay still. It has certain movement. It has certain agitation. It has a certain kind of a movement. So this restlessness is a very subtle aspect of our mind. Now the problem is that restlessness can cause a certain agitation in the mind, and ultimately you start thinking. So restlessness is one cause for thinking. Probably you can remember when we were discussing Yavakalapi Sutta. So we discuss about Injana, Kampana, and then the Prapancha, Pandana. So likewise, few terms are there in the Yavakalapi Sutta. So this Pandana, certain agitation, certain restlessness, is a cause of thinking process. Our thoughts can initiate when this kind of an agitation is there, restlessness is there. So the mind can't stay still. Now, if you ask your kids, say your kid is a young boy, maybe 2-3 years old, and you start that kid to stay quiet, sit here. So he can't sit for a long time. He start moving here and there and looking this and that. And he even cry, telling that I can't sit like this. Because our minds are kind of restless. So this Arahant is, by the way, not restless. He can stay quiet. He can stay still. Aruddhato. Save vachayato muni. And he is truly a muni, controlled in speech. Now, so these are very subtle qualities actually explained in this sutta. And little by little we'll try to look at them closely and see how we can learn from them, where we have certain discrepancies, certain drawbacks, shortcomings, and then try to incorporate to our lives. So with that note, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Questions, please raise your hand and we can go through those questions. I don't have any written questions so far.
Yeah, so the one, I think this Geshan, I think you have put a message. It's a hurricane, not a tornado. So what's the difference?
So hurricane is it's basically the water that is going to bring, so the rain that will, and the wind gusts, and the tornado is just the absence of sort of atmosphere there, so it basically sucks everything up. You probably would have seen
a
funnel that lands into the landing area. Mm-hmm. It doesn't generate from the sea itself.
Mm-hmm.
So that there is a difference between those two.
Right.
So the
hurricane brings a lot of rain.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Rain and the wind.
Rain and the wind. Right.
That's correct.
Okay. So Milton is coming.
So, yes, that's correct. One of the things, one of the small notes that I noted down when you were talking about actually react spontaneously, which means not to dwell in the past and not to wish for the future. And I always think about, in the layman terms, we always try to study for a certain objective, to maybe an exam.
Mm-hmm.
So you are basically thinking of a future. But I think in that context, what you were talking, yes, day-to-day life, we got to improve ourselves. But how I look at it, in the normal times that I am not doing, but not to wander my mind in the future, creating a lot of things, which may call, I would say, the prapancha.
Mm-hmm.
Just wander, let your mind wander around, but to know that is wandering, and just to bring your mind to your body and try to keep it in that context.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a good analysis or a way of thinking.
Yeah, that is one method actually. You are putting yourself, your attention to the body is one way of overcoming that. And but if you can look at the mind itself and recognize it, that may be another approach available at the Chittanupassana level. So typically what we do, by the way, at the beginning is to always use the body, maybe a body sensation, to calm down. But actually looking at the mind directly, confronting it, recognizing it, is also helpful, and it helps you to directly confront the situation. So that is also a possibility. And there, as you recognize it, as you understand, okay, now the mind state is like this, you acknowledge it, you be with it, but you are not promoting it. So slowly it will fade it away. Now you become more peaceful. It may be more direct than you divert your attention to the body.
Yes. Okay, I understand. Thank you. But are there any other questions anybody has?
Anything? Yeah. So we are here. We have your niece. Nephew, sorry.
Oh.
Yeah, Chamila, right? Chatura. Yes, he is with us today. So he has a little question. Yes.
Sorry, Bhante. So as Bapa was mentioning about spontaneity within an arahat's mind, I've also heard the term intuition.
Mm-hmm.
When I think of intuition, I think of the right answer that comes at the right time, usually when the mind is very still.
Mm-hmm.
Is that also a quality of the arahat's mind?
I think so. Yeah, actually, and even in the one of our previous, discussion, we discussed this spontaneity or intuition. So as you become more open-minded and kind of restful-minded, mind become more peaceful, so the action become more spontaneous. And it is also not governed by the kind of reaction or emotion, what we say, the avekashili, so the sort of you are driven by an emotion and then you act. But now the opposite is there in the mind. So mind is very peaceful, very quiet, very still, but still maybe action is required. So how the initiation comes, it has to come from the wisdom, because the wise mind is not fabricating. No, what we need to understand is that avijja paccha sankhara, every time. No, when there is ignorance, it causes a lot of fabrication in the mind, which leads to fear, which leads to regret, which leads to agitation. So the ignorance is one major factor for all the restlessness happening in the mind. But on the other hand, if there is wisdom instead of the ignorance, so that mind basically is peaceful mind, isn't it? So the wise mind is a peaceful mind. Now that wisdom is quite opposite to the today's, you know, the knowledge, what we are talking in the mundane terms of our science and all that, the knowledge. Say those professors, and they are very restless, isn't it? I mean, they are with a lot of obsessions and a lot of conceptual proliferations, endless thinking. And so that is not the proper knowledge. But the Buddha's knowledge, that the Buddha's wisdom, is always calming down the mind, relaxing the mind, releasing the mind, quieting the mind, and basically stilling the mind. So once it is there, it doesn't mean that he is an inactive person, isn't it? He is also an active person. But as you said, spontaneously he is acting. Coming that the prop, the im, the impromptu kind of an action.
It's as if, Bhante, because all things are subject to causes, it's at that moment those causes align and that comes up within the arahat's mind as a form of intuition, like the right thing to do at the right time.
Something like that.
Harmonious.
Very, very, very well harmonious, yes. Mind is in a very well balanced evenness of the mind is there. So he seems to be easily, spontaneously acting what needs to be done quickly. isn't it? Now for us, we may have to reflect about the past, compare the situations and analyze and all that, then probably we taking an action. But the Arahant, on the other hand, he is endowed with the wisdom, isn't it? He has the complete clarity of the mind, calmness of the mind. So he doesn't, it seems like, he has some kind of a extraordinary kind of a wisdom, maybe. He's spontaneously is acting. So he doesn't need to think a lot to act. And on the other hand, now typically our actions are maybe biased. Our actions may be based on the fear, based on the attachment, based on our desire, or what we call the agatigami. You need the typical, the four type of deviations or biases are explained in the Dhamma. Chanda, dosa, bhaya, moha. So chanda means that you have a certain preference to someone. So based on that, you take an action. So you are given the prominence, you are giving the importance to the preference, accordingly you become biased. Chanda, dosa. You are angry with someone, accordingly you take another action. Dosa, bhaya. You are afraid of someone. As a result of that, you take an action, afraid. Moha. You are ignorant of something, so ignorantly you take an action. So this is the typical way we take an action, we do an action. But in the Arahant's case, all these four are absent. There is no any preferences, there is no any fear, there is no any anger, and there is no any delusion. So the actions still can happen without any of these wrong roots. So it's always therefore has to be a very kind of a correct action. Probably the point is now sometimes we can't even see why he has taken that action, isn't it? Because we don't have that capacity. So we still ignorantly we try to assess why he did it. But there may be a deep meaning for him why he did it. But we probably can't understand it even.
And even Bhante, there are times when the mind is very still and calm. There may be a problem that has lingered in the mind for a while, and at that moment the solution arises, but even we are questioning that solution sometimes because we're like, well, that doesn't seem right, but you do it and it's the correct one. So even we can come in conflict with the low desha moha mind. Even when the solution comes in a still and calm mind, there's sometimes a conflict within us.
Exactly. So even though the solution is already with us, we don't like to accept it. We don't want to implement it. Our rational mind come and hinder it, come and block it, come and try to rationalize it and weigh it. Ultimately, we are not implementing the correct solution even. It can also happen. Definitely, it can happen. So that's why sometimes, so often there are situations like, say, you are in the mindful walking. So you feel very calm, very relaxed, very quiet, your inner chatter completely stopped. Instantaneously there may be a solution to a problem what you had. So because the mind become very calm and quiet, and you didn't even think about the problem, but the solution comes. So likewise, it's a kind of a interesting phenomena how our mind is capable of giving such solutions. We can't have that solution maybe if we think, isn't it? If we think, then we become confused, we become more burdened. We can't have such solution. But when the mind is quiet, even without our invitation, mind is giving the solution. In the deep unconscious level, there may be a kind of a problem, maybe laid down. It has triggered the solution while the mind is quiet. Very interesting, actually.
Thank you.
Yeah. No.
It's a question, a written question. Let me read that to you. Most respectful Bhante, most respected Bhante, much merit for your teaching. Very interesting sutta. Could you please explain the six type of equanimity mentioned in the sutra? Please, Dervan Saranai.
Yeah, actually, in this sutta, it didn't come to a point where the equanimity is still explained, but typically, six kinds of equanimity are explained with respect to the Arahant based on their six sense bases. Chalangupekha. So they are the ch means the sixth type of equanimity towards the different sense bases. Say whenever he is seeing something, still he can maintain the equanimity. When he is hearing something, still he can maintain the equanimity. Smelling, tasting, touching, thoughts, still he is maintaining the equanimity. Now this equanimity is based on the wisdom, by the way. Now one can become equanimous based on ignorance. But here he thoroughly understood the true nature of the formations. He thoroughly understood the true nature of the formations. So therefore, even during the seeing, he can maintain that equanimity. Even the hearing, he can maintain that equanimity. So likewise, with respect to the six sense basis, one can become equanimous. But there are other forms of equanimity, like say you can have certain kind of an equanimity when one is developing the jhana, particularly mentioned in the fourth jhana there is equanimity. And say we are talking about equanimity when we are talking the feelings, the happy feelings, that means pleasurable feelings, painful feelings and equanimous feelings, there is equanimity there. But these are different groups or different scenarios. But the Chalangopekka with respect to the Arahants is actually the six sense basis, where he is dealing with the world using the six sense basis, how he is capable of maintaining the equanimity.
So Bhante, is this the similar kind of explanation what I heard from Ditte, Dittamattam, Sute, Sutamattam, Vihariti?
Definitely. So there is a relationship, because he understood their true nature, and not just because of the concentration bhava, rather he understood their true nature through vipassana. So now he still see things, but mind doesn't want to get involved. Mind prefers its seclusion, the calmness, the peacefulness. Even though he hear things, still mind prefers the peacefulness. So likewise, even though the senses or sense bases are operating, mind is very much like independent.
And a further clarification is asking about, is the sixth type of equanimity only applies to Arahat?
No.
Could we invoke the practice before become Arahant?
Definitely. Now that's why, I mean, even though we are talking these qualities to the Arahants, it doesn't mean we have to wait till we become the Arahants to develop it. I mean, we can't do it. It is not that you become completely ignorant person today and tomorrow you become a fully enlightened Arahant. Rather, you may be an ignorant person today, but tomorrow you have to develop a little quality. Day after tomorrow, again, you have to develop another little quality. So likewise, the practice is a gradual practice. So this gradual practice, slowly, slowly enrich ourselves with the necessary qualities, necessary skills, ultimately helping us to abandon all the defilements and you become an Arahant. So that's why Buddha sometimes giving the simile of the gradual deepening of the sea to his Dhamma. He says that immediately I am not proclaiming the Arahanthood. So it's a gradual practice, gradual training, and then the gradual realization.
Very good. Thank you very much, Bhante. That's all written questions that I have. I don't see any other question from our side.
Right. So then, since there is no any other question, then we'll wind up the session. So I like to invite Dhammo Sadhu. You have the So probably you can remember the verses, right? So Dhammo Sadhu is with us, so I invite him to conduct the sharing of merits. Oh, you know, spontaneous.
Spontaneous. All right. May the teachings that we have received today benefit our relatives, benefit the deities, and anyone who is in need of merits. May the teachings of the Buddha that have been planted in our hearts grow, producing path, fruition, and nibbana. I invite you to join in the recitation of the traditional Pali verses. Ettavata chamhe sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya ettavata chamhe sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhutanumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya ettavata chamhe sambatam punya sampadam sabbe sattanumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya Akasatta chubumata deva naga mahidrika Punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkanta sasanam Akasatta chubumata deva naga mahidrika Punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkanta desanam Akasatta chubumata deva naga mahidrika Punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkanta mamparam Dango nyati nango tu sukita huntu nyateo. Dango nyati nango tu sukita huntu nyateo. Dango nyati nango tu sukita huntu nyateo. Imina punya kamene mami bal samagamo. Satang samagamo tu yawani bana patia. Imina punya kamene mami bal samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya imina punya kammena mami bal samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya sadu sadu sadu, sadu.